As the vehicle skidded into the Wendy's parking lot, heavy rain was coming down in sheets, slanting sideways.
Dude, I'm starving. I need a Baconator, or I'm gonna die.
Fig slurred from the seat, his breath stinking of tequila. I told Fig to seat behind me because my passenger side window doesn't open, and I feared the drunk moron might vomit on me.
You're not gonna die, you're just drunk and being dramatic.
In actuality, we had just left a house party. The drive-thru held the same emptiness as the interior of the restaurant, without cars or voices, just a fixed humming from the intercom system. I came to stop in front of the speaker and waited. 5 seconds later, a voice came through.
Wendy's, may I take your order?
The voice was cartoonish, high-pitched, sing-song, almost mocking a little girl. Before I could respond, the drive-thru window slid open. There was a middle-aged man in a red wig, his hair pulled messily into two pigtails that were greasy and ratty. The blue and white striped dress made from poor quality fabric clung to his sweaty body. His sagging chest was stuffed with bundles that looked like plastic bags. The white apron he was wearing had something on it that wasn't ketchup, and he smiled at us.
Welcome to Wendy's. What do you want, fellas?
He chirped. I instantly felt sick to my stomach.
What the hell?
Fig burst into laughter.
Holy shit! It's Wendy herself! Hey, where are your freckles, lady?
The man's smile never wavered. He leaned on the windowsill, resting his chin in both palms, batting his lashes.
Oh, you are a naughty boy!
His voice was syrupy and purring with a lisp.
You keep talking like that, and you'll make this girl blush.
Fig continued to howl in laughter.
God, bro! What the hell is this?
I shifted uncomfortably, gripping the steering wheel even tighter.
Could you just order your food?
I said, trying my best to ignore him. But Fig, bloody drunk Fig, leaned out the window slightly, slurring insults between giggles.
Hold on. You ever kiss your dad dressed like that? Bet he loved it, huh?
The man's eyes narrowed slightly. The smile didn't falter, but something shifted behind his gaze. The man's left eye twitched like it was the calm before the storm.
You think you're funny, don't you? You bad, bad boy.
I tried to be the rational one and screamed out orders sitting inside the car. The man let out a sinister smirk and then disappeared into the kitchen. His pigtails jauntily bounced.
Dude, I can't breathe. That guy is insane.
I was quiet, his look still fixated out the window. Something was off. The man had taken too well. 15 minutes later, he was back. The man leaned halfway out with our food. He had a little tremble in his arms, but his eyes were locked on Fig.
Come on, naughty boy,
he sang softly.
Come get your treats.
Still laughing, Fig and his still-warmed torso half-popped out the window to grab the bag. That was when the man grabbed him. It happened unbelievably fast, and I didn't see it coming. One bony hand firmly clamped around Fig's outstretched wrist, the other thrust into his hair, pulling hard. Fig yelped,
"What the hell? Hey!"
But the man was strong, too strong. Fig's legs whipped and kicked. His sneakers had little traction on the leather seats. His arms pinwheeled helplessly.
How about some kisses from this naughty girl?
The man shrieked as he made a violent pucker with his lips. Fig screamed. The man's stinking breath rolled over him. A fetid cocktail of cigarettes, grease, and rotting teeth. The first kiss landed sloppily on Fig's cheek. The other on his forehead. Then he licked Fig's nose, leaving a trail of slime.
You taste so sweet!
His voice was babyish and breathy, sending chills down my spine.
Oh, damn!
Fig thrashed violently, his face contorted with terror. I grabbed Fig's legs and started pulling him with all my strength, but the man's grip was inhuman. Fig's legs slipped farther out, his torso bent over the window frame.
Let go of him, you freak!
I roared, clawing at Fig's belt to keep him from being dragged out. But the man kept giggling, peppering Fig with wet, smacking kisses. Blood vessels popped in Fig's face from screaming. I let go, not of Fig, but of my fear.
Fig, just hold on for a second, please!
I threw open the car door and stumbled out into the rain. I could hear Fig screaming.
Hurry up, he's gonna pull me in!
His sneakers slipping on the slick pavement, his eyes darted around wildly. A traffic cone sitting at the edge of the driveway. Without thinking, I grabbed it. The plastic was slick and heavy, filled with sand at the base. I sprinted back to the car and swung. The first blow landed across the man's face, sending the man's wig flying. The second cracked against his jaw, making teeth clatter onto the ground, but he didn't let go. Fig was still hanging halfway out of the window, kicking and screaming. I screamed like an animal, swinging over and over. The foam cone struck the man's face, his cheeks split and the flesh peeled back. Blood sprayed out across the pavement, and at last, the man released Fig. He fell back into the car and scrambled frantically into the back seat.
Go, go, go!
He screamed, blood splattered across his face. I didn't look back. I threw the car in reverse and peeled out of the drive-thru. As we got away, Fig cried. He was shaking like a leaf. I hung onto the steering wheel like it was the only thing keeping me alive with white knuckles. Neither of us said anything. But just as we were getting clear of the parking lot, Fig glanced at the rearview mirror. The man stood at the window. Blood ran down his face, his dress, and his apron. His left eye was swollen shut, but he was smiling and waved. The moment I stepped through that broken side door, I knew we'd made a mistake. But Maggie was already inside, like some eager ghost hunter, camera flash illuminating the forgotten corners of what was once just another fast food joint.
Leo, you've got to see this,
she called back.
There's actual satanic shit scrolled everywhere.
I followed reluctantly. My boots crunched over broken ceiling tiles. The abandoned Wendy's looked like it had been frozen in time, then slowly picked apart by decay. Overhead, fluorescent lights flickered without rhythm, which was strange since the place was supposed to be without power. This place is such a letdown, I said, trying to mask my unease with sarcasm. We drove 2 hours for this? But Maggie was in her element, documenting every pentagram and occult symbol spray-painted across the walls for her 100K or so TikTok followers. Suddenly, Maggie disappeared into what must have been the kitchen area, and I hurried after her.
Check out this freezer.
She pointed to a massive walk-in with a rusted handle.
Bet this is where they did their rituals.
Yeah, right next to the expired chicken nuggets. I snorted, but my heart wasn't in the joke. Maggie yanked on the freezer door, which groaned in protest, and a blast of impossibly cold air hit us.
That's weird. The place has been abandoned forever,
Maggie whispered, her breath suddenly visible.
How's it still working?
She stepped inside, camera raised. I reluctantly followed, the hair on my arms standing on end from both the cold and something else I couldn't name.
There's nothing here,
Maggie said, disappointed as she swept her flashlight across the empty metal shelves. Just then, a faint sound emanated from somewhere in the freezer. A rhythmic tapping, like knuckles against glass. Maggie moved deeper into the freezer, camera flash strobing the darkness.
Hello? Is someone...
Someone's messing with us, I said, my voice embarrassingly tight. And then the freezer door slammed shut behind us with a sickening thud. We rushed to the door, but it wouldn't budge. The handle was ice cold, burning my palm.
Use your crowbar,
Maggie urged, gesturing to my backpack. I'd brought it for protection, not to break out of a goddamn freezer. I was working the crowbar into the door seam when we heard it. The knocking, faster now, more urgent. Somebody else was with us. I turned, crowbar raised defensively. Maggie threw the flashlight. What we saw made our blood turn cold. Walls covered in deep gouges, like someone had taken a knife and carved jagged lines everywhere. Hundreds of tally marks scratched into the metal. Someone was counting days, I whispered. Maggie's flash went off again, illuminating what wasn't there before. A dark figure standing in the corner. He was wearing a blood-stained Wendy's cap, its face half melted as though from freezer burn. In its hand gleamed what looked like a meat cleaver. I shoved Maggie behind me and swung the crowbar wildly.
Get the hell away!
In the next flash, the figure was gone.
What was that?
Maggie cried.
I don't know, but we need to get out.
I jammed the crowbar into the seam and pulled with every ounce of strength I had. With a sudden groan, the door gave way on its own, swinging open as if it had never been stuck at all. We tumbled out into the kitchen, gasping in the comparatively warm air. Then my eyes darted to the walls around us. New scratches covered them. Deep, violent gouges that hadn't been there minutes ago.
Run!
We sprinted through the restaurant, knocking over chairs, slipping on debris. Something was behind us. I could hear its footsteps, wet and deliberate.
He's toying with us!
I panted as we groped our way through what seemed like an endless maze of corridors and storage rooms. How could a Wendy's be this big? Nothing made sense anymore. Eventually, we stumbled into what must have been a break room. The walls were covered in melted candles and strange symbols drawn in something dark and flaking. In the center stood a table with old photographs spread across it. My hands trembled as I picked one up.
These are employees. Look at the dates.
The photos showed smiling staff members from various eras, the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. But in every photo, standing in the back row was the same figure, a man with a faint smile, his face unscarred. Maggie's finger tapped one image.
It's him! The butcher! From before!
The candles suddenly lit themselves, their flames casting monstrous shadows on the walls. From the darkness came a hoarse, broken voice that sounded like it hadn't been used in years.
No one leaves the freezer alive!
Our screams could have awoken the entire America. We ran blindly, no longer caring which direction led out. Behind us, the footsteps grew faster, the scraping more frenzied. We found ourselves at a boarded-up window. Without hesitation, I smashed it with the crowbar, helping Maggie climb through first. The jagged glass tore at our skin, but the pain barely registered through the adrenaline. We sprinted into the woods behind the restaurant, branches whipping our faces. I could feel blood trickling down my arm from where the glass had cut me, but I didn't slow down. When we finally reached the road, headlights appeared like a miracle. I stepped into their path, waving frantically. The car screeched to a halt. A middle-aged man rolled down his window, concern etched on his face.
What's wrong? You kids look like you've seen a ghost.
Maggie, gasping for air, clutched his door.
There's someone in there! He's killing people!
The man's expression shifted from concern to unease.
That Wendy's been shut down since the employee accident in 2000.
The blood in my veins turned to ice. Slowly, Maggie and I turned back toward the woods. There, at the tree line, stood the butcher, his cleaver dripping red onto the forest floor. His cap was pulled low, but I could see his smile, that terrible, patient smile. As the driver followed our gaze, the butcher stepped back into the shadows, vanishing between one blink and the next. Maggie's hand found mine, her fingers ice cold and slick with blood. We both knew what we'd seen, and we both knew, somehow, that he'd find us again. My feet were killing me. 6 hours into my late-night shift at Wendy's, I swear I could feel each bone grinding against the next. Nobody was around, except the usual handful of night owls. So I kicked off my sneakers under the counter. Sweet relief. That's when he walked in. Stringy hair that looked like it hadn't seen shampoo in weeks. His skin was so pale that it was almost translucent under the fluorescent lights. But it wasn't until I asked for his order that I realized he was a weirdo. His eyes never met mine. Instead, they were fixed somewhere below the counter. When I shifted my weight, his gaze followed the movement of my feet.
Sir, can I take your order?
I called out loudly. He blinked slowly, like someone waking from a trance.
I
I need more time. My skin crawled as I walked away. Everything about him made my stomach knot up. Still, I busied myself wiping down the already clean coffee station, stealing glances at him. That's when I caught it, the slight movement of his arm, his phone angled under the counter. He was taking pictures of my feet. I quickly tucked them out of sight, heart hammering against my ribs. Should I confront him, or maybe call my manager? I'd dealt with creeps before, but then he ordered, and I told myself it'd be over soon. As I set down his tray, he accidentally dropped his keys and brushed my ankle with cold, clammy fingers.
"I like your shoes," he said, eyes still fixed on my feet. "The way they hug your arches, perfect fit."
I yanked my foot away.
"Thanks,"
I muttered, wanting to be anywhere else. Throughout his meal, I felt his gaze on me. When I dropped a fork, he practically dove to retrieve it, his fingertips deliberately grazing the top of my foot. I couldn't suppress the shudder that ran through me. When he finally left, he handed me a 20 for a $5 meal.
"Keep it all,"
he whispered, leaning in close enough that I could smell the sourness on his breath. I thought it was over, but it wasn't until I was counting my tips that I found his note tucked between the bills.
"Can't stop thinking about your perfect feet. I'll be seeing them soon."
The whole drive home, I kept checking my rearview mirror. Nothing. Maybe I was overreacting. By the time I stepped into my apartment, exhaustion had replaced fear. I took a long shower before sinking onto my couch. That's when my phone buzzed with a text from an unknown number.
"Do they hurt? Let me rub them for you."
My blood turned to ice. I dropped the phone and frantically checked my windows. They were all locked. I pulled down all the blinds and tried to calm my racing heart. Just some creep who had somehow gotten my number. I blocked him, and nothing happened for the next hour. Just as I was falling asleep, I heard it. A soft, scratching noise under my bed. My throat closed up. I lay perfectly still, barely breathing, straining to hear. Nothing. Complete silence. Slowly, I leaned over, phone clutched in my hand like a weapon, and peeked under the bed. Empty. I let out a shaky breath, just my imagination. But when I turned back toward the window, my heart stopped. There he was, standing outside, barefoot on my second floor balcony. He pressed his face against the glass, eyes wide and unblinking. In his hands were my sneakers, the ones I'd been wearing at work, the ones I'd left under the counter. His tongue dragged slowly across the sole, his eyes rolling back in ecstasy. I screamed, stumbling backward and knocking over my bedside lamp. By the time my eyes adjusted to the darkness, he had vanished. Then I heard it, the gentle creak of my back door opening.
"You shouldn't have worn them tonight."
His voice drifted from the hallway, soft and trembling with excitement.
"You're gonna give them to me, Moira, and I'll take the feet too."
I grabbed the ceramic vase from my nightstand and hurled it into the darkness. The satisfying crack of it connecting with flesh gave me just enough time to bolt for the front door, but he was faster than he looked. His hand closed around my ankle, yanking me to the floor. My chin cracked against the hardwood.
"So beautiful,"
he moaned, his fingers trailing up my calf.
"I've been watching them all night."
I kicked wildly, my heel connecting with his face. The crunch of cartilage was sickening but satisfying. He howled, clutching his nose as blood poured between his fingers. I scrambled out the window, my bare feet slipping on the fire escape. Pain shot through my heel as something sharp sliced through it, but adrenaline pushed me forward. I could hear him behind me, breathing hard, his footsteps unnervingly quiet, like he was floating rather than running. The alley behind my apartment was a dead end. Trapped, I spun around to face him, blood dripping between my toes.
"You're mine now,"
he whispered, lunging at me. My fingers closed around a broken bottle on the ground. As he grabbed my ankle, I plunged the jagged glass into his cheek. He screamed. I drove it deeper, twisting until he finally let go. I staggered back, watching him writhe on the ground, clutching his face. His eyes never left my feet. Then, headlights flooded the alley. It was my neighbor, Officer Reed's cruiser.
Moira, are you hurt?
I couldn't speak, could barely breathe. I just pointed at the man on the ground, who was still staring at my bloody feet with a look of sick adoration. Later, after they'd taken him away, after they'd searched his apartment and found all those shoes, all those toe tags, souvenirs, he'd called them. I sat in the back of an ambulance, a blanket wrapped around my shoulders. You're safe now, Officer Reed said gently. But I couldn't stop staring at my feet, couldn't stop the trembling. The cameras they'd found at Wendy's showed he'd been watching me for weeks, recording every shift, every movement. I ain't wearing open-toed shoes ever again.